Cambridge 105, Community Radio in your city. It's Friday night, 27 minutes before 6 o'clock, and that means it's Gadget Guide time with Rob and Lawrence, and we're looking at gadgets in cars today. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Good evening, and welcome to actually the first anniversary edition of the Gadget Guide as well. It's just over a year since the first time we had one of these.
Congratulations. I should be finding a piece of paper or something to give you. That's first anniversary, isn't it, paper?
I think so. If it's got the Queen's head on it, it's even better.
Okay, I guess so.
And if it starts with the numbers 5 and 0.
Sounds good to me. Yeah. Anyway, as you say, Julian, we'll be coming on to car-based gadgets in just a couple of moments. But as usual, we'll be doing a quick roundup of some of the technology news of the week. So a few items, really, this week, in quite a diverse range, really.
Yeah, so the first one I spotted was the BT Open Zone are closing access for O2 customers from the 1st of July. So historically, if you were on O2, you could use BT Open Zone for free.
So this is the Wi-Fi hotspots.
Yep, and that's going away.
Oh, dear. Moving on to Windows now. Windows 8.1 is coming out soon, and that's not quite like the Star Wars track, but it's the return of the start button. Microsoft, of course, have played that down as a marketing line a little bit, but fundamentally it seems to be that everyone got fed up of the start screen being the only way you can get at programs, and so they are actually bringing the start button back.
Whether you'll get a start menu popping up is another story. The other thing that I spotted was we've been talking about 4G, but can you actually get 4G without major commitment? Well, EE have now got a 30-day rolling contract, so no major commitment. £33 will give you 3 gigs of data, so a realistic amount.
That's
for a realistic
not bad
amount
at all.
Of money.
Yeah, but at the other end of the price plans, Vodafone have launched the Smart Mini. So this is a £50 phone on pay-as-you-go, so very, very cheap. But also importantly, it's actually running Android 4.0. Which isn't the very latest release, but it is still in that latest 4.something series, so very very interesting if you're looking for a decent cheap phone.
Yeah, not a bad phone, 3.5-inch screen, 2-megapixel camera, 4 gig. Nothing special about it, but for someone with their first smartphone desires, that's certainly a good phone to look at.
Mm. On the tablet front, we've got the new Samsung Galaxy Tab, and that, interestingly, is going to be using an Intel processor, so that's a name that you normally associate with desktop PCs. And there are rumours that that'll run not only Android, which is what we see on most of the tablets that aren't Apple, but also possibly Windows 8.
I guess it would be Windows 8 RT, but yes, be interesting to see what comes of that.
Maybe. Could be quite popular in the business.
Of course, in gaming, we've got Microsoft and Sony both showing their cards on new consoles.
Yes, and this was really an interesting PR battle because Microsoft got an awful lot of stick for the Xbox One launch. You have to actually be connected to the internet all the time. And then, of course, Sony went and...
And said, well, only once a day for the Sony. So, yes, the PlayStation 4 is Sony's new offering due out. And, of course, Sony have undercut the pricing. You know, he who shows the price first loses. And so, yes, be interesting to see what those two come out with when they launch. The other thing is the PlayStation will allow you to stream the older games directly from Sony, so you can rent games to play them.
Oh, very good. And then finally, back on the telecoms front, the EU has apparently voted to ban mobile roaming fees. This is on everything. This is voice, text and data. And I think this is in your area, really, isn't it, as well, Julian, isn't
that's,
it?
That's a very interesting one, actually, particularly also with the ever-growing European Union. You're never entirely sure as to whether the country you're in is part of the European Union.
For example.
Well, precisely. So you get caught out and your data just gets guzzled up. It seems to be so much quicker when you just step outside of the European Union.
And of course, that's quite interesting in some of the bits where you're right on the border. So I know when I was in Friedrichshafen, which is just on the south edge of Germany last year, you could stand on the shore of Lake Constance and your phone would switch between German and Swiss operators.
Yeah, I popped out of the Eurostar the other day on the train, and just as you came out of the cut tunnel into Kent, looked at my mobile phone. It was still happily picking up French networks at that point.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so you've got to worry about that. But that's coming next year, so hopefully everyone's phones will cost them less to use in Europe next year.
Fingers crossed. That'll certainly be very welcome to anyone who travels a lot.
Anyway, that's the news.
Sounds good. Right, car gadgets. So a few different topics to talk about here, but let's start off with the new toys.
So this is when you go out car shopping.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Julian, I think you were possibly looking at some of this, weren't you?
I was, yes. Now, my dashboard, you ever get sort of full up of stuff, and it's almost at the extent when I need a new car to actually fit it all
just
into.
Just to fit more gadgets.
Yeah, precisely. So I don't have too much. I have, obviously, the car radio, which is in there anyway.
And I'm guessing we'll have some listeners using that right now.
I guess we probably will. There'll be the CD player, which is attached to that, which rarely gets used these days. I tend to be more of a radio listener.
So I guess, can your CD player play MP3s?
I'm not entirely sure, because I use it so rarely I haven't even actually bothered to check, to be absolutely honest with you.
That's something to look for.
But then we get to the interesting stuff, because I have a DAB radio adapter. Obviously, I like listening to 105, but I also rather like listening to cricket. And if you want to avoid the shipping forecast, the daily service and everything else, you kind of need to get the digital feed going. And so then you're getting into the realms of having aerials draped and wires stretched. And the other day, I just got fed up of this cabling, so they decided to put the cabling underneath the dashboard as opposed to over the top. But of course, that's lessened the signal. I'm going to have to put it back if I want to listen to a constant
lots of constant
commentary. Precisely, you know, what do you do?
Stick it to the windscreen. But this is all stuff that you should be looking for when you are looking for a new car.
So, as I said, you know, these days the CD player will normally play MP3. So that's burning a CD with MP3 files on it and then loading that into your CD player in your car, which means you could get 600-700 tracks onto a CD as MP3s, giving you a good music library to play from a single disc in your car.
And also you normally sort it into folders as well and create playlists and so on.
And most of these units will display the artist and track name on the screen.
But how easy is it, if you've already bought your car, how easy is it then to swap it out to change a CD player? If you discover your CD player can't play MP3s, how can you switch it out in order to make sure it can?
That depends quite a bit on the model of car. So some cars, it's just a sort of standard form factor. So there's the sort of the standard width, and then either one or two units high, effectively.
So the unit of car radio size is called a DIN unit. One DIN unit is the classic car stereo size.
Sort of 3 or 4 inches, I guess, tall.
Yeah, and then some of the newer cars have got really big things because they've got big screens or lots of extra controls on them. So looking at that, you've got to work out what will fit in there. Now, fortunately, a lot of the head unit manufacturers out there have realised that this is a problem, and a lot of accessory manufacturers have gone, so there's a market here for making adapter kits. So basically, you can take out the thing that your manufacturer supplied in the car and put in a bracket to make the face of the dashboard look the same.
So this is right in, as opposed to my DAB adapter, which of course just plugs in, plunger on the window, cluttering up the windscreen, which you really don't want if you can help it.
Yep. So this is actually ripping out what's in the dashboard and replacing it.
But just watch out for that, because especially if you've got a more modern car, then a lot of the time nowadays, the car radio is actually integrated
pretty much molded in, aren't they?
Well, not just physically. So you normally get adapters that you fit over the top of it and it makes it look okay. But for example, in my car, things like the reversing sensors come up on the car radio screen, and in my previous car the radio display was also all of the engine data, and of course that you quite often will lose if you go to a third party solution, so you have to watch out. On older cars, not so much of a problem, but on the more modern ones.
Well, on the more modern and on the more expensive cars in the ranges that have got these high-end radios, they are putting a lot of stuff into that. You've got a nice 4, 5, 6 inch screen on the dashboard, and they're putting information there relevant to the car. So as Rob said, information about the engine and so on. I know my car, it's got the GPS, the sat nav stuff on that screen. It's a touch screen, as well as things like service intervals. So it'll come up and say, you know, your service is due and things like that. If I change that, I lose all of that. So yeah.
But watch out, because along with sort of losing the ability to change the head unit so easily, a lot of the modern ones do have things like aux in. So you have either an iPod connector or these little 3.5mm jacks. And that means that a better way often is actually, as you've done, to get something like the sort of the window stick on. And we'll talk about those in a minute. But if you're in a position to actually be going for a whole new car, look out for, as Lawrence has said, things like the MP3 input, the aux in, or even Bluetooth audio in. We'll come to Bluetooth for phone calls in a minute, but you can also actually use Bluetooth for playing music off your phone.
What do you need to look at as the specification for that?
So the technical term is A2DP. The letters A2DP.
And your average garage, they'll know what that's about if you're asking them?
They might do. It's probably labelled as something either Bluetooth media or Bluetooth music. tend to be the sort of the brand names.
If you can get your hands on the book for the car in the dealership, have a look at that. Hopefully it'll have the details about
that. I guess you can if you're doing a bit of research. You can probably find this online if you're looking.
Yeah. I mean, all the modern smartphones from Apple and all the Android phones and Windows phones can do this protocol. So, you know, if you're test driving a car, connect your phone up to the car's audio system and see if you can play your music through the car.
Now, I'm intrigued now, because when I got my car, which actually is probably about a good 2 or 3 years ago now, I had a couple of extra bits put in. It was a second-hand car, but it was like new enough to have a couple of bits and pieces put in. One of them was reversing lights, because I can't park, or reversing indicators, I should say, because I can't park reverse park to save my life. And the other thing was an audio system for my phone, and that was Bluetooth, which was put in as the car kit for that particular manufacturer. Right. Would that work with music as well, or is that going to be restricted to the voice?
That's the problem, is a lot of the earlier Bluetooth phone car kits could only do phone calls. The problem is the A2DP that Rob said is a newer protocol, a newer version of the software that the Bluetooth talks, that was designed for doing music and audio over Bluetooth rather than just phone calls.
And as a result, it's much higher quality as well, which is where you can use it for music.
So it depends on the device, basically. Some of them have had software updates that can add this, but it does depend on the device.
Okay. Now, you mentioned about not being able to park. Something else to look out for, and this really is in the higher-end cars, is that there are now some cars, I think Audi certainly have it, and I believe Ford do as well, is that some of them can actually park themselves.
Yes.
So you drive up, it'll tell you when there's a parking space next to you, so you don't even have to notice that. You push a button, take your hands off the steering wheel, and it'll drive itself into the parking space.
You take your hands off the steering wheel and the pedals.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
It's quite scary. It will actually dock itself into a parallel parking space.
Many years ago, in Bury St Edmunds on a Tuesday afternoon, I sat my driving test. And I passed remarkably first time, and the examiner said to me, "Congratulations, Mr. Clover, you've passed. But next time when you park, just remember to take the handbrake off."
Wonderful. I don't think you'd get away with that, Neil.
I rather suspect I wouldn't. This is Cambridge 105, 105 Drive, and we get all the cars because we're talking about gadgets this afternoon with Rob and Lawrence. What are you going to tell us about next?
Well, you've said that you can't park. How about getting places?
Oh, no, I'm no good at navigation. I'm sound like the sort of person you need to avoid, really, whenever you're out on. It's not that bad.
So a Christmas
really,
present for Julian will be a copy of the AA Road Atlas, will it?
I do get lost easily. That's the trouble. So
it's better than that, because you know when it's okay to be on the roads in Cambridge, because we know that you're on the radio.
That's a very good point, actually. Being sitting here at the busiest time of day is actually quite useful. But the one thing I find, actually, particularly with sat-navs, is it's almost a reassurance. If you're delayed and you're stuck in traffic, you know you're going to be getting there eventually. It may, the time you're waiting to get there
the
may go up.
The whole ETA display is quite useful.
Yeah, I just find it's a bit comforting, shall we say, other than sort of like worrying and panicking. You just accept it.
And also, of course, if you go wrong, then you know that no matter how much you go wrong, you're never going to end up. I remember certainly when I first started driving, you'd go onto Google Maps as it was on your desktop and you'd print off your set of instructions. But of course, as soon as you went off that route, if you didn't have a map book with you, you were
completely done for.
Or you got to an area and they had a diversion.
Yeah.
And so, a not particularly well signposted diversion sometimes. Anyway, so if your car has a built-in GPS or some sort of sat-nav in the dashboard, one of the things to check is, have you got the latest map software? So this you'd get from your dealer. Although there are ways to get it on eBay and online and so on. They're not necessarily legitimate, but normally check with your dealer. And that'll be delivered either some sort of memory card or a DVD that will go into your device to actually update it.
And are these normally manufactured by one of like the big people, something like TomTom or Garmin or something like that?
No, TomTom and Garmin don't own any mapping data, which is interesting.
That's very interesting.
They licensed it all from a crowd called Navtech, who have actually been bought by Nokia, which is quite an interesting one.
The former popular phone manufacturer.
Yes. So Navtech produce probably more than half the mapping data that goes onto these sort of devices, and they will just brand it for that particular device and that manufacturer, put it in the right format for their device, and package it up so that it's ready to go onto it. So, making sure that you've got the latest mapping data, as well as also the latest software on the devices, because it is a software device, it is a small computer. So the improvements that they can add to those, they can add things like camera notifications. You know, there's a speed camera coming up. Now, some of the manufacturers release updates on a monthly basis for this, so that you can actually find out when they've moved.
But what about
the
cameras?
Well,
like I said, the cameras do move around, and sometimes
mobile ones, pretty much no chance on that one for anything that is a update on a monthly basis. That's where you're starting to talk about wanting something with a bit more interaction as far as a smartphone is concerned. So some of the mapping tools on smartphones have facilities to do things like report when you see a camera or a policeman on the side of the road, and you can go, I've just seen a policeman. And everyone else using that app will get told that.
I'm too busy safely driving to start do that sort of thing. But
it's a one tap on the screen.
Okay.
So one tap on the screen, and it says, well, what are you reporting? And you go, there's a hazard, you know, roadkill, or I've spotted a policeman. And it then flags it up for everyone.
But it's more than just
it's the high-tech equivalent, isn't it? The old days when
when you got the thumbs down on the flashing headlights.
Well, I was thinking more like the AA patrolman would salute you if there was a policeman up ahead as he came along on his motorcycle.
But it's not just the speed cameras, of course, which no one's worried about if they're driving within the speed limit. But at the other end of the spectrum, traffic jams.
Absolutely.
A lot of this sort of stuff you don't even have to report. Just the action of your phone moving around. Google Maps, for example, has this. If you're driving down a road and it thinks there's traffic and you drive through and it's clear, you'll actually see the road go green behind you as it notices that your phone has travelled down this stretch of motorway at 70 miles an hour.
At the published speed limit, yes.
And it'll use that to clear the traffic report.
That's interesting. We're getting into a bit of data sharing rules there. So presumably at some point you'll be ticking a box or something or other to tell people that, yeah, that's fine to share this information.
Yes. Yes.
And the FBI's got it anyway. but it does mean that the more people use these services, the more valuable they get. So now no longer have you got the sort of the AA traffic master type stuff, which is maybe only updated every half an hour.
And that's
maybe
based on sensors in the road.
Exactly, every 5 miles or something on the road. You're now getting real-time reports. Because if you think of how many people drive down the A14 every day, it's a vast number. And if 10% of those are using a sat-nav,
A sat-nav with reporting capabilities.
And it's quite interesting, the information that we get here, the stream we get of information is very useful, but actually what's the most useful is when listeners send us a text or give us a call, when it's safe and legal to do so, to tell us actually what's happening, because it adds the colour to the information that's already available.
Yep, and often is the highest quality as well. So, sat-navs on your phone, of course, there's the usual ones, so there's the ones that come with your phone, maybe Apple Maps, if you've got an iPhone, Google Maps if you're on an Android.
Do they draw on data? This is something I've often wondered. If you're using Apple Maps, is it pulling it in off your 3G connection as opposed to, say, a TomTom app or
yes
similar?
Yes and no. So a lot of these tools let you fire it up when you're on a Wi-Fi connection on your broadband at home and put your route in. So say I'm going from A to B, and it will then download all the maps for that route.
Okay.
So basically you're going to reduce your footprint as far as downloads of mobile data by doing it all in advance. Google Maps lets you actually go in and select areas of the map on screen and say, I want this chunk of England or I want the whole UK. And as long as you've got the storage on the phone, it will download all of those maps to your phone.
But Julian, you've said something like TomTom, and there's also these third-party solutions from a lot of the well-known manufacturers, and that's something you've gone for, isn't it?
My option is at the moment is TomTom on the iPhone, which I think I mentioned to you guys. I think chatting off air, I purchased when the price came down to a sensible one.
But they're still looking at £40-odd.
They're still looking
for
£40 for it. But I'd used a regular standalone TomTom device, and I'd kind of got used to the familiarity of that. But the combination of needing to update the maps anyway, as you've discussed already, and the fact that my one was so old, it was pretty chunky, and it was just And also with a lot of these things, it's the convenience. It's avoiding having to carry something else, particularly with the security aspect of not leaving it in the car.
You've always got your phone with you.
Precisely.
Although the one thing to watch out, if you are thinking about getting maybe if you've just recently got a smartphone and you're thinking about using it for sat-nav, watch out for the battery life. It absolutely eats your battery. So if you're used to maybe doing a day's worth of use out of your phone between charges, think 2 hours, maybe tops.
So I have a charger. It's just part of the thing which clips into the window.
You've got to watch that even on the charging front. If it's not a charger that your phone thinks is an AC or a mains adapter, generally the phone will not charge the battery off it if you've got the screen on.
I could tell you another story about that, but I'm conscious of the time, so we might save that for another time, guys.
Yeah, I think we're going to. But, of course, there are still these standalone GPSs, and there's an awful lot out there, and they're very good ones,
and they've all come down in price. They've had to compete with smartphones.
Well, I think that's just about all we've got time for.
It probably is.
Christian's lurking outside there.
Back in 2 weeks' time.
Yep, and 2 weeks' time, I think this is with Matt, you
Mr. Webb
said.
Will be here for you, yes.
Excellent.
So what are we going to be talking about with Matt?
We're going to be talking about gadgets on demand. So this is things like the music, the film, and even software as a service. So this is things like Spotify, Love Film, and the new offerings from Google, and also Microsoft on things like Office software.
Oh, I should be tuning into that, providing I'm not having a nap at the time for reasons we'll explain later.
Work out what food we can provide for your gadget.
I like the sound of that. Rob, Lawrence, thank you very much as always. A podcast of this available over the next couple of days.
Thanks, Julian.
Thanks, Julian.
You are the loneliest person that I've ever known. We are joined to the surface, but nowhere else. I look in the glass and stare your strained, gray, motionless face and ask, underneath, is there a golden soul? Take care of the ones that you love. Take care of the ones that you love. Baby, I'm leaving here. You need to be with somebody else. I can't stop bleeding here. Can you sit your moments? Everyone is beginning to breathe as I break down. You are in love with the shadow that won't